Nah, I'm gonna kill you. That's exactly what I'm doing.
Do something.
That was the sound of Kamaru Usman and Jorge Masvidal exchanging expletives on Super Bowl Radio Row, about 10 feet from our ESPN Daily staff, in January of last year. The two would fight 5 months later, with Usman coming out on top. And now their feud continues on Saturday at UFC 261, with the welterweight title on the line. Today, Dotun Akintoye profiles the reigning champ, Kamaru Usman, the man known as the Nigerian Nightmare. And he explains why just beating Masvidal won't be close to enough. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, April 22nd. This is ESPN Daily. Dotun, thanks for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Dotun Akintoye is a writer and editor for ESPN, and his cover story on Kamaru Usman is available now on ESPN.com. UFC 261 is this Saturday night in Jacksonville, Florida. It's a big deal. It's 15,000 people, full capacity crowd, which is its own ball of wax. But at the center of it is welterweight champion Kamaru Usman and his challenger Jorge Masvidal. And I know Usman won the first fight by decision back in July, pretty convincingly, Dotun, to retain his belt. So just setting up the stakes here, framing the fight for those who aren't as familiar with MMA and the UFC. What's at stake here? How would you describe what we're going to see on Saturday?
Well, I think like many great fights, it feels like a kind of referendum. Masvidal has the love of the people, popular support.
The fight clock is brought to you by Modelo.
Wow! One of the greatest knockouts you'll ever see!
Masvidal made a statement. And he
is Kamaru has a record 13 straight wins as a welterweight, and he's currently the most dominant champion in the UFC. Masvidal wants Kamaru's belt, and Kamaru wants the sort of public acclamation that Masvidal has and that Kamaru doesn't think Masvidal deserves.
What were circumstances like in their last fight?
Well, it was taken on very late notice, I believe 6 days for Masvidal, but it's also 6 days for the champion, who was expecting to fight Gilbert Burns, who was diagnosed with COVID. And so the fight was on late notice for both of them. Kamaru came into the fight with a broken nose. Masvidal had a brutal, drastic weight cut at the last minute.
Usman going back to the well with that shoulder strike. And looks like maybe he opened up another cut on the forehead now of Masvidal.
So neither fighter feels as if they had a chance to show the best version of themselves.
And still, the undisputed UFC welterweight champion of the world, Kamaru Usman.
Your story on Usman, Dotun, which is the latest edition of ESPN's cover story, you had the chance to spend some real quality time with him out near his home in Denver, Colorado, where he's been training for this fight. After spending time up close with the man, how would you describe him as a person, as this figure in the mixed martial arts community at this point?
Well, he is handsome, talented, charming, open and welcoming, and nevertheless utterly mystifying. I think it's hard to get a handle on who he is or what makes him tick, no matter how much you know about him, because he has this way of disclosing information without revealing anything about himself. He was raised in Auchi, Nigeria. He is the son of a teacher and a shopkeeper, his mother, Portia. And his father, Muhammad, was an officer in the Nigerian military who went and studied abroad in the late 1980s and was away from his family for many years. Kamaru was born in 1987. He didn't meet his father until he was about 4 years old. He has an extremely vivid memory of the first time he met his father and the awe of that memory.
Everyone in the village is around. There's a car. I can't quite make out what kind of car it is, but there's people in front and around the car. I'm making my way through the crowd. Everyone's tall. I'm little, tiny.
And so he gets to the front of this crowd. Everyone's waiting around the car, and he sees a man there dressed in cowboy boots and black jeans.
I see his shoes, and I notice he's rocking the snakeskin cowboy boots.
And people are telling him, your father's home, your father's home.
I just remember, boom, that was the first time I saw him. Oh, that's my dad.
His dad was not just strict, because strict is simplifying. He was strict as a means of teaching his sons and his daughter the standards that he expected them to live by.
My dad's the kind of dad that we would try so hard to impress. My dad would walk in the house from working all day. And we came back from school. We you know, maybe done the dishes, ate, cleaned up the house. We always, that was the thing in our house. We always wanted to vacuum, make sure the house was spotless when my dad came home. And my dad would walk in. First thing, he looks up. What's that? I'm like, what? He's like, what's that? Pick that up. What's on the floor? It's like, we just vacuumed the whole house, and you come in, and first thing is the maybe a little piece of something that's on the floor. That's how tough my dad was.
Kamaru and his family, they move to Dallas, Texas, from Nigeria when he's about 8 years old, and it's done so Kamaru's father could continue to pursue a career in medicine. That transition as an immigrant to the United States, how would you characterize how Kamaru experienced all of that?
He remembers, I think, having some difficulty assimilating. His name was strange and incomprehensible to people. His accent was funny. His English was a little bit broken. Kids would do what kids do. They would make fun of him. They would tell him to say phrases he didn't understand that would get him in trouble. And so this was all the kind of familiar milieu of a young child trying to integrate into a community that he doesn't understand yet. But for the most part, the Usman children were rather well adjusted. They all played sports. The youngest is a volleyball player. Muhammad, Kamaru's junior brother, is a mixed martial artist himself now. Cash played soccer, and Kamaru wrestled. Kamaru is getting a drink one day after band practice, and a coach approaches him and asks him about wrestling.
Well, have you tried wrestling? We just watched Stone Cold. We just bought the pay-per-view. We just watched Stone Cold fight Rock or somebody. I'm like, nah, I don't want to get hit with chairs.
Kamaru's like, well, wait, I don't want to have chairs thrown at me or throw chairs at anybody else. He thought he was talking about professional wrestling. And then the coach said, well, I bet you're not even tough enough. A kind of kidding provocation.
So he kept making fun of me. I'm like, all right, coach, you know what? I'm going to come in. I'm going to embarrass everybody in the gym. I'm coming.
So he showed up the next day and proceeded to be pinned several times by a young woman who was a three-time state champion in Texas at Bowie High School, where Kamaru was enrolled.
I just remember the feeling of, I can't get up if I wanted to. There's nothing I can do to get up. I just remember walking home that day defeated, like, yo, I just got embarrassed. But in my mind, all I was thinking was, I'm going back.
He was so embarrassed, and he didn't know what to do, but he was determined to return the next day. And he did. Kamaru's high school coach, David Mudgett, is still the wrestling coach at Bowie High School. He's been there for 27 years. And the first day Kamaru showed up, he's in a gym of 50 or 60 wrestlers. Coach Mudgett is taking roll. he arrives at Kamaruddin Usman, and he stops because he cannot pronounce the name. He's looking at Kamaru, who is looking at him, and he looks back at his roll, and he picks out the letters M-A-R-D-E-E, and he says, Marty. And that's how Kamaru's nickname was born. That story is significant for a couple of reasons. One, it's a kind of perfect metaphor for what assimilation means to young people.
Mm.
The parts of themselves they have to change and alter in order to fit in. And it also figures in Kamaru's story because several opponents in the UFC, a near opponent in Ben Askren and an actual opponent in Colby Covington, have used the name Marty as a kind of insult to Kamaru, a way of questioning his legitimacy and questioning his origins.
And when they mention that and they have this sort of knowing, impish, I gotcha kind of energy behind it, what are they trying to do there, Dotun?
Well, it's complicated, I think. I think it maybe speaks to the fact that they think Kamaru is not authentic. They're trying to use the fact that they don't think he's authentic against him. And so instead of Kamaru Usman, they tried to other him in a kind of weird, paradoxical way. Marty was meant to bring him into the culture.
Right.
They're using it now against him to sort of exclude him from their culture. It's a really strange inversion, actually.
Yeah.
And so he really bristles at it when it's used by people who don't have the right to use it or were trying to use it as an insult. But he's deeply, deeply grateful to the community and the men who gave him that name when he was young. So the name Marty is, like every other story about assimilation, extremely complicated.
So I want to go to 2010, Dotun, because after wrestling for Coach Mudgett in high school in Texas, he winds up at the University of Nebraska, Kearney. And he becomes a Division II national champion at 174 pounds. But in terms of the interior life of Kamaru Usman, that same year, everything for his family changes. What happens?
So at that point, Kamaru's father, Muhammad, owned two ambulance companies in the Dallas area. And he was rounded up and arrested in an FBI sting called Operation Easy Rider, which was a sting of ambulance companies throughout Texas. And he was eventually charged with fraudulently billing Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurers for ambulance rides that were deemed not necessary. In other words, people who didn't need those rides would receive those rides, and then the billing would go out to Medicare, Medicaid, private insurers. So it was healthcare fraud. So he was arrested for this and eventually sentenced in 2010 to 15 years in prison. This is, I think, the most important thing to happen to the Usman family. One, because it deprives them of their patriarch at a critical time in the life of his kids. But also, they had lived up until that point as sort of models of integration, models of excellence. There is the enormous sense of responsibility Kamaru feels to his parents to live up to the standards that they brought him up with. And then he is also himself, I think, as a matter of his own natural proclivities, an extremely internally driven person. He's always felt, even as a very young child, that he was alone in his own head.
I'm seeing the world the way that I'm seeing the world. No one sees the world the way that I do. No one experiences things the way that I do. In my mind, I go to a place where I know no one else is doing this. No one else is here with me.
And so I think when you match those two things up, his own sort of natural gifts, and you match that with his upbringing, you get a uniquely inward-driven person.
All right, coming up, why Kamaru Usman wants to break Jorge Masvidal's soul.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Dotun, in 2012, Kamaru attempted to make the U.S. Olympic wrestling team, but he failed to qualify for team trials due to injury. And I know that by age 25, Usman turned his attention to MMA, and he was a skilled wrestler at the time, but in just the second fight of his career, Usman found himself in a championship fighting alliance event, fighting way down on the card, facing this fighter named Jose Caceres. What happens in that fight?
Yeah, this was a very early period for Kamaru in mixed martial arts. He basically only knew how to wrestle, didn't know how to throw strikes really at that point in his career, and certainly didn't know that most exacting of mixed martial arts, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And so he's taken his opponent down, but suddenly his opponent has his legs wrapped around him. And Kamaru doesn't know what to do with this.
I just remember him, he wrapped his legs around me. I never felt nothing like that before. I never even seen this. I'm like, how is he this flexible? What's going on right now? For the first time, I panic and I'm like, oh, I don't know what's going on. I gotta do something.
In a slight panic, he eventually gives his opponent his back. And that opponent applies a rear naked choke.
I'm so nervous. I've never been in this position before. It was a foreign feeling. My legs just got heavy, obviously because it was starting to swell up with blood. And I could hear his corner telling him, he's gonna tap. And then I remember in the back, we had a meeting, a rules meeting. And the commission come in and they tell you the rules and they say, if you are choked unconscious, it's an automatic 6-month suspension. So you can't compete.
At that point in his career, Kamaru is living with his mentor, Rashad Evans. He is completely broke. He thinks to himself, I can't be on the shelf for 6 months.
So now I start thinking, I'm like, you know, my bank account got like $17 in it. I need this check. Whew, if I get choked unconscious, that's 6 months of no check coming in. And for the first time, quit on myself. I tapped. And as soon as I made that decision, I knew that I never wanted to feel that ever again.
He loses that fight. He walks backstage and he paces around backstage for about 2 hours. And so he is devastated. But as he's devastated, he's also changing, and he is swearing to himself that he will never be in the cage without all the necessary skills again. He'd already sort of gone through all the stages of coping and had arrived at the other side making firm decisions with himself, and he's never lost since.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of people going through the stages of grief, but few people end up going undefeated in MMA thereafter. You get through all of them. Like in May of 2019, after this run of just dominating the sport, he gets his first title chance against the then welterweight champion and an extremely accomplished MMA fighter in Tyron Woodley. What happens against Woodley?
the Woodley fight is a perfect microcosm for understanding who Kamaru is. He doesn't lose a single round to Woodley. And he doesn't lose a single round to Woodley because he will not let Woodley breathe.
Wow! Usman's just out wrestling Woodley right now. From beginning to end of this match so far, he's been out wrestling him.
He is on him at all times. He is coming forward at all times. He is mauling him against the cage. He is throwing punches relentlessly when they are in the clinch.
And Kamaru digging with that right hand to the body. I mean, he's working so hard on that. Look at that, constantly digging, digging, digging. I mean, they will sap your energy. He's so relentless with that.
It is not a virtuoso performance, but it is a flawless one. It's not virtuoso because it's not flashy, but it is devastating. It's relentless. And in between rounds, Woodley isn't just tired. You can see it on his face that he's confused.
Look at how Tyron's standing there with his legs locked, standing straight up. He is wobbly and hurt.
He doesn't know what to do about this. He doesn't know how to make it stop. It's funny that they call Kamaru the Nigerian Nightmare. Woodley says in a post-fight interview in the Octagon, twice, I think, within the span of 30 seconds, that being in the fight was like being in a bad dream.
I was prepared for this fight, and it's just sometimes you have those nights where you don't feel like a bad dream. So, shout out to him. Hopefully, we can win this
match. And I think if people want to understand who Kamaru is, they need to go back and watch the perpetual motion machine that he is that night.
What happens after he wins the belt? What was his reaction?
His daughter is there, and he picks her up, and he's holding her, and Joe Rogan is interviewing him. And at the end of the interview, he goes on, grabs the mic from Joe Rogan, and he addresses his daughter.
And when this little girl came along, she lit a fire under me, Joe. She lit a fire under my ass, and I got going. And here I am, baby. Here I am. Daddy did it. When you grow up, I want you to remember this day forever, okay, baby? Daddy did it. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, everybody.
And he tells her that he wants her to remember this moment forever. And I couldn't help but think about his own first memory of his father. And so the generational transference of obligation and duty and responsibility, all the things that he feels and that he carries with him and that are the engine that he's feeding all the time, they were all there in that moment again.
There is such an asceticism in your descriptions, in your story of Usman Dotun. There is such a discipline, a very particular dedication and care that he approaches everything with. In terms of what he actually really enjoys, his pleasure principle, as you call it in your piece, what is that?
It is the moment in the fight, and it's hard to describe because I think only fighters really experience this. The real victory in a fight is the breaking of another person's will.
When I break a guy's soul, when I break him, and I just feel him crumble, his will breaks, that guy remembers that for the rest of their life. They never forget that.
If Kamaru has one thing that feels like enjoyment, a way that he lets his hair down, he has no hair, it's in that moment. And he feels that in the UFC, he has broken every single opponent he's ever fought, except for two.
I think maybe two guys can make the case that they weren't fully broken. They still had a little bit of fight left in them. The Viking, Emil Meek. And this guy that I'm about to compete against, Jorge Masvidal.
I want to understand this better. What did Usman tell you about why Masvidal counts as one of the men who has not yet been broken by him?
Well, Masvidal was able to look him in the eye afterwards. You can hear Masvidal on the mic saying, "I'll get a couple of wins and we'll run it back."
And Masvidal just said, "I'll get a couple wins and we'll run it back." Just love to see all the class that is dripping off.
Undaunted, really, by spending five rounds in the ring with Kamaru and not winning a single round. In fact, only being awarded one round by a single judge. And yet, he wanted to fight Kamaru again, and he thinks he can beat Kamaru. And Kamaru cannot accept that. He cannot accept the idea of parity with a fighter like Masvidal. Kamaru has 13 straight wins in the UFC. Masvidal has 14 losses over his career. So Kamaru just doesn't consider him the same class of fighter. And so he cannot accept that he was in the cage with Jorge Masvidal, and that Jorge Masvidal afterwards was not willing to concede that Kamaru is the better man. I think, as always with Kamaru, it's a thing happening inside him. His real umbrage is with himself. Kamaru is always trying to master Kamaru. His coach, Trevor Whitman, told me that he thinks Kamaru is trying to be his last self. And that is a near impossible goal. It's a goal you can't help but fall short of. But that's why he keeps going. That's why he wants more. That's why it's not enough for him to beat Jorge Masvidal. He has to take everything from him.
Up next, Kamaru's father has never seen his son fight in person. That may change on Saturday.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
We talked earlier, Dotun, about how Kamaru's father, Muhammad, went to prison for medical fraud in 2010. But in February of 2020, after serving 10 years behind bars, Muhammad got released, and he has never seen his son fight in person. Dotun, do you know if Kamaru's father is going to be there in Jacksonville for the rematch against Masvidal?
Well, I texted Cash Usman, Kamaru's oldest brother, and asked whether their father was going to be present at the fight on April 24th. And he responded and said, yes, he would be. So he'll be allowed to leave the state and attend the fight in Florida. And I also asked Kamaru what that was going to be like. And he gave a very Kamaru answer, which is that he learned from his father,
nothing is greater than the task at hand for me. And I've always kind of felt that way.
And I asked Kamaru's coach, Trevor Whitman, what it was going to be like for Kamaru's father to be there. And his coach said, that's something Kamaru's keeping to himself. And I do think he doesn't like to bring emotions into the octagon in that way. When it's over, when it's all said and done, if he gets the result he wants, I'm sure he'll bring his father in the octagon and they will rejoice together. It would be a major moment and a culmination for both of them. But I honestly do believe right now Kamaru is pushing that to the side.
There is a scene, Dotun, as you search for ways to understand an often inscrutable professional athlete, one of the best athletes on the planet today. There is a scene you choose to end your piece with that struck me as a strong encapsulation of who Usman really is and what he embodies. What did you witness during Usman's training session out in Denver?
Kamaru let me watch sparring one day, and he sparred a few rounds with alternating opponents. I believe it was Kamaru's sixth or seventh round sparring. For the second half of that final round, he was just going to do ground and pound on a leather grappling dummy. And so he has now fought six or seven rounds of fairly active sparring. He was clearly tired. And they throw the dummy on the ground in front of him, and he gets down into full mount, and he has to spend the next 2.5 minutes striking the dummy in the head, punching and elbowing the dummy. 30 seconds in, a scream is building every time he's elbowing or punching the dummy. And the octave in the scream has risen. And you can tell that he is just emptying himself out. And he is punching and screaming and punching and screaming. People in the gym are starting to stare. And it's just getting louder and more desperate sounding. All the aspects of Kamaru are present in those 2.5 minutes. It's all the responsibility he feels. It is the perpetual gritting of his teeth, the immense discipline, the immense self-control, the constant testing of his own seriousness and his own commitment and his own desire and need to perfect himself. He needs to find the end. He needs to know that truth about himself. And so he won't stop.
Dotun Akintoye, thank you for taking us inside the mind of one of the greatest athletes that exists.
Thanks for having me, Pablo.
You can stream Usman vs. Masvidal 2 at UFC 261 this Saturday, exclusively on ESPN+. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.